Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the July 11th episode of Pub Talk Live, the live publishing talk show airing the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am your host, Sarah Nicholas. I'm a young adult author, board member, and agent liaison for Pitch Wars and a library event planner. You can subscribe to reminders via email by clicking the link in the description so you don't miss a show. You can also follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Pub Talk Live. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can find a link to the Patreon near the end of the video description down below. I also wanted to let you know today, a special announcement for this week, that my book, Keeping Her Secret, is currently on sale for 99 cents this week in ebook, in case you wanted to pick that up. So just a heads up on that. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on our guest co-host. Zoraida Cordova is the author of many fantasy novels for kids and teens, most recently the award-winning Brooklyn Brewhouse series, Incendiary, and Star Wars, A Crash of Fate. Her debut middle grade novel is The Way to Rio Luna. She is the co-host of the podcast Deadline City with Danielle Clayton. Zoraida was born in Ecuador and raised in Queens, New York. When she isn't working on her next novel, she's planning a new adventure. So please welcome to the show, Zoraida. Hello.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing? I know you're like super busy. You got so many deadlines this year.
I know. Yeah. I feel like I maintain the deadline life pretty well, which is why Danielle and I started the podcast, yeah. Deadline City.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come on the show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Let's see. We got a couple people here. Heather is here. Hey, Heather. Victoria. These are a lot of the regulars. We call them pubbers.
Hi, everybody.
They named themselves one day, and I was like, that's so cute.
It's good. Jennifer. We all need a group name.
Yeah. And Jessica, Ebony. Hey, Ebony, glad you made it back. Lodestar, glad you made it tonight. Ebony says, hi, Zoraida.
Hi, Ebony. Oh, there I see. I can see the comments now. They're taking a second to load.
Yeah, it'll take a little bit. And then Kevin and Bess are here, so welcome, welcome. So we have more good news for you than we usually do this week. So that's promising, I guess, more positive news. I feel like some weeks, so much of the news is so negative but we have some good stuff today.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, thank you. Everyone should read Keeping Her Secret. Thanks, Jen. So you have about 25 minutes to go vote in the viewer poll for this week. So I want to make sure you do that if you haven't done it yet. It's for writers this time. So if you're not a writer, then I guess don't vote in it. But the question is, are you more of an underwriter or an overwriter? And that will close around 9:30 and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode.
I'm really interested to see what people say to that because
I'm surprised. I
have my own opinions. Yeah.
Oh, hey, Jay, welcome. All right, so we're going to just dive right into the news, starting with some good news. Yay, surprising literally everyone. Print sales are actually up 2.8% in the first half of 2020 compared to the first half of 2019. Experts are crediting the spike in children's nonfiction books parents bought after schools closed in March, and also the spike in anti-racist book sales following the murder of George Floyd in May. So that was something I don't think anyone expected all the bookstores being closed.
I got that notification and I was like, oh, this is pleasant.
Hey, we're not all, I feel like every couple months there's that news cycle of like, here's how books are dying or here's how books are dying this week.
I've been hearing that books have been dying since 2008. Yeah. So when I started like trying to get an agent, and that's what my teachers would tell me. And I'm like, just because you were unable to, you know, get published when you were 18 doesn't mean book sales are dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm always happy whenever book sales are up. That's good for everyone.
Sure. Yeah. Next.
Yeah, you have the next piece.
Awesome. The National Book Award ceremony has now officially gone virtual. The event, which is usually a black and tie affair, will be held online on November 18th. And the events usually taking place the week before the event will be virtual and spread out through October and November.
Yeah. So this was kind of, people felt like this was like a late announcement, but I feel like it's four months away, right?
Yeah, so. It's only July. Also, I'm kind of sad because I've been to two National Book Awards and I went to the National Book Foundation Writing Camp, which is hosted by the National Book, by the National Book Foundation. And they had me come and give a speech when I was in high school about like why camp is so great. Like writing camp is amazing. To sort of encourage the board to keep writing camp, but I guess my speech just wasn't that good because they took them from camp.
No. You know. I wouldn't blame yourself for that one.
I know. They were going to do it anyway because they were like, yeah. Oh, free writing for, 50-something people from all over the world and we pay for everything. We could put that money towards something else. So, yeah.
But you went another time too?
Yeah, and then I went, I just asked them, I was as an usher, and so I just like, this is where you sit, what number table do you have? And I got to meet Toni Morrison, which was really nice.
Oh, that's so cool. I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Maybe one day. I was a judge for the Audies last year, and so they like invited me to go to that ceremony. I was like, I'm not going to New York for that ceremony. I live in Florida. It's a long ways away.
It is a long ways away, but you know, the location is beautiful. It's like the fanciest thing that publishing does, to be honest. I mean, I don't know about, I've been to like an ALA ceremony, like in the background, but the National Book Awards is beautiful.
Yeah. I had the pleasure, Lisa Lucas came down, and Jason Reynolds was here at the same time, and they had like an event in Orlando. And she was talking about how she wanted to make the National Book Awards like the Oscars for books.
Mm-hmm. And it already sounds like that.
Yeah, I was like that. I've wanted that for so long. To have something of that nature. And I know they're like looking at streaming and stuff the last couple of years, but it hasn't been like widely really picked up.
Yeah. Like a network needs to pick it up, or I don't know, Hulu or somebody just.
I had the idea, and I tried to convince my library to do it 2 years ago, is to have like a viewing party, you know? And I think that's something that libraries could do pretty easily. Well, in normal times.
Yeah, I agree.
But they wouldn't stay open late for it. So whatever, I'll try again. All right. The next piece of news, John Bolton's The Room Where It Happened sold more than 780,000 copies in its first week. The publisher is doing an 11th printing that will bring the total of copies over 1 million. The Trump administration's lawsuit seeking to block the book is thought to have boosted interest in it, which is again happening with Mary Trump's book now, too. Like, how many of these Trump tell-all books are we going to have to suffer through?
I feel like, I wonder if they're not doing anything to actually change people's minds, I wonder. I wonder if anybody's going to read Bolton's book or Mary Trump's book and say, oh, wow, I see this person for the monster that he is all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, they're not saying anything new.
That's super defeatist, right? That's super defeatist. But, you know, because we like to say like, oh, books change lives. Yes, that's true. But I think that like, the people who my latest book is a high fantasy with like an evil king. And I'm like, that king is going to be evil no matter what. There is nothing that's, you know, so man, just vote in November, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Jennifer says they're more likely they're all preaching to the choir. That's kind of the thing, is like the people who are going to read that book are the people who are already convinced he's a monster.
Yeah.
Especially with Trump trying to quash it, like his supporters aren't going to read it because they're, you know.
Do they? Yeah. Like I don't even associate, like, this is like a book culture, like Trump people don't feel like book culture people to me.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong.
The Oprah car thing. You get a book. You get a yeah. book. Yeah. I'm tired. I don't want any more Trump tell-alls. No, thank you.
All right. So let's move on to the next one then.
Yeah.
Ingram is investing millions of dollars to increase capacity units, print-on-demand manufacturing plants, and distribution network by double-digit percentages. They're citing disruptions in the publishing supply chain and industry shifts as reasons for the improvements. They're also building a new 50,000 square foot plant in Melbourne, Australia, which will double their print and shipping capacities in Australia in the fall.
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw, like, especially during kind of the height of the distribution crisis in like April, some publishers who normally have like traditional print runs were turning to places like Ingram to do large like POD print runs instead. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Ingram is thinking that that's going to kind of continue, that need is going to be there for the long term. So
yeah,
it's just like, this is like publisher inciting baseball, but for anyone who's like kind of watching and seeing how the industry is going to change, I think this is you know, kind of an indicator of things to come.
That's really interesting because I've done some print-on-demand books and the quality is a lot different. So I wonder how they would make things, like, specifically for paperbacks, because trade paperbacks have such a unique look and feel. So I wonder how that will change.
Yeah. I think Ingram does hardcovers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they do hardcovers too. So I've seen a couple indie authors doing those, especially in the mystery sector.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Australia too. I've heard a lot of people in Australia complain about like their kind of options there. So that seems like it'll be a good thing for them too. All right. Sir Patrick Stewart is working on a memoir. There's a book I will read. He'll write about his stage performances, Star Trek, and his voice work on American Dad, in addition to reflecting on his childhood, which included poverty and domestic violence. He'll also discuss his political advocacy and ongoing charity work. Are you a Star Wars or a Star Trek fan? I know you're a Star Wars fan.
Wow, call me out. I'm actually looking up, because I was like, oh, what's he going to name his memoir? Mm. That's what's super interesting to me, is what they name their actual stories. Like,
yeah.
In Anthony Daniels, who plays C-3PO, his biography is called The Inside Story. Which I wonder if it changed because I am C-3PO, The Inside Story, because obviously he, you know, every time he introduces himself, I am C-3PO. But I know that Anthony Daniels wanted to call his biography Telling the Odds, which also is adorable, but I wonder what Patrick Stewart would name his biography.
Mm, that's a good thought. I wonder if he'll go with something Star Trek related or if he'll try to make it more like broad,
like Living Long and Prosper. I don't know.
Something with engage in the title.
Gretchen is a more Star Trek person than me.
Jennifer said, I hope he narrates the audiobook. I'm not a huge audiobook person, but I'd love to hear him. Yeah, I'm sure if it's at all possible, they'll get him to do it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he could make it something Marvel related. Yeah.
He's been so many amazing characters, but definitely like Star Trek is so iconic, right? Mm-hmm. So
and that character especially.
Yeah. I love it. Well, let me see. Well over 100 famous journalists and authors, including Noam Chomsky, J.K. Rowling, Salman Rushdie, Margaret Atwood, Gloria Steinem, and David Brooks, released a letter in Harper's Magazine against what they see as cancel culture. This set off a string of criticism, including and resulted in an answering open letter.
Yeah. that happened. I felt like this is not something that I really wanted to talk about, but it's something that was so big this past week that I felt like I had to include it in the news, you know?
Yeah. I think this is one of those things where, you know, we're all sort of preaching to the choir again. I personally don't think that something is cancel culture. I think that it's consequence culture is what we should look at it for certain things. And there's a big difference between like this book. There's a book that is writing something that I don't want to read versus like this person is actively hurting an entire community of people. It was really sad to see that, or disappointing, but maybe not so disappointing. Like Salman Rushdie, like he gets all these like beautiful girls and I'm like, how?
I saw this one like really super tongue in cheek Twitter thread where someone was like insulting all the signatories of this letter.
And then she met her mom.
That was like the thing that she said about Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get these girls to marry you?
Like literally tell me because I want to know.
Beth said, so embarrassing. No more cancel culture, putting everyone in the recycling bin until they do better. yeah, well, because it's just like these people of all people who like, they're so big that they're literally unable to be canceled as the way that they're describing it. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you just say you don't want criticism?
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
And if you don't want to talk about it on Twitter, don't talk about it on Twitter. You can just not respond as opposed to pick fights with somebody who has 3 followers when you have 4 million followers. It's just, it's ridiculous. Like people try to pick fights with me on the internet all the time. The mute button is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Yeah. Someone tried to pick a fight with me today saying, I don't know if they were trying to pick a fight with me or other people, but they're saying gobs of people in my mention said something. And there were literally 2 people who said that thing.
That's so like, Twitter. You know, there should be something like, this should be a show called That's So Twitter. because it is, it's like, oh, so many, or when somebody starts a tweet saying, so many people have said, I'm like, literally one person said this. You just want a start to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter isn't real life. Oh, man. I get so much of my news from Twitter. It's like, it's a really lovely relationship.
I get almost all of my news and then I go to the real news, but.
All right. So there is a new virtual book festival from an unlikely source. That's why it caught my eye because there are so many virtual book festivals right now. But this one is from MailChimp. They launched By the Books, which features 14 books chosen by the co-host of the Call Your Girlfriend podcast, transcribed interviews, a new podcast series called The Books That Changed Us, and a collection of essays curated by Ashley C. Ford. So we're going to include the link. Oh, this is a good time to say that. If you haven't watched the show before, all of the things that we're talking about, the links are going to be in the description later tonight. So you can go read more about them if you want to. And I'll put the link for this book festival down there as well. But it was kind of weird to me because it doesn't seem like there's any like live events or anything. So it's really just like a collection of content and they're calling it a book festival, you know?
Mm. I don't know that podcast.
Oh, I don't know the podcast either. But But yeah, MailChimp.
I use that. As soon as I saw MailChimp, I was like, oh, I should send out my newsletter, which I haven't sent since April.
You know,
when my book came out.
I have like a MailChimp where I send out a reminder about the show on the day of. And I almost forgot today because I have like the free account, so I can't schedule. I have to like send it out when I send it. And I was like kind of looking over the show notes and I saw that and I was like, oh, I need to send that. So it only went out like an hour ago.
But yeah. Oh my God. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this week. I'm just getting to it.
Oh man. Okay. Oh, there we are. Cool.
Awesome. Can I go on? Yeah, go for it. Awesome. Comedian Phoebe Robinson is launching Tiny Reparations Books, an imprint with Plume, a division of Penguin Random House, which will publish literary fiction, nonfiction, and essay collections. They seek to highlight and amplify unique and diverse voices.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we see like these kind of celebrity imprints happening all the time.
There have been a lot of imprints launching in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if it's that Twitter thing again, where I saw two imprints launching and all of a sudden I'm like, so many. But that's, I guess that's the reaction. But this looks excellent.
Yeah. And she has, I think at least two books out herself. So,
and this is amazing. She's like 34, 35 or something like that.
Mm.
So that's amazing to have an imprint. That's so good.
Yeah. I don't really, the thing that I'm confused about with these celebrity imprints, maybe you know, Sarita, is it does it. So they'll be like, oh, this celebrity is getting an imprint and this is who the publisher will be and this is who the editor will be. So what does the person actually do?
They the carry celebrity. It. So, okay. You know, it's sort of like, the way that, you know, they're the only imprint that I truly know, the way it functions is, the Rick Riordan imprints, Rick Riordan Presents. Mm-hmm. And with that imprint, it's still part of, you know, it's still part of Disney. It's he is literally presenting these titles. But as far as I know, Uncle Rick, does edit the authors in addition to, I don't know if he's involved in every acquisitions, or if he says like, I want this kind of book and then the other editors acquire it. But I know that he's very like,
he provides guidance.
A lot of feedback, a lot of guidance, which is the whole point, right? It's like he is helping launch these people of color into the publishing industry.
Yeah. I love what he's doing with his line. I think it's great.
I've read a few of the titles and many of them are so good.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for answering that. I'm glad you were here.
I'm good for something.
You're good for a lot of things. Oh, this is a good time to mention, if you don't listen to Zoraida and Danielle's podcast, Deadline City, you should definitely add that to whatever app you use to subscribe to podcasts, because it's really great.
Yeah, we're taking our season 2 break. So we're going to come back in the fall for season 3, but we had a lot of, like, we talk about everything from character arcs and writing to interviewing Jason Reynolds and asking him why he hates dragons. Just it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. I listen to it when I'm walking.
Thank you.
And I remember y'all mentioned me on one of the podcasts. It's when I had that tweet go viral about, like, if you want to be a writer, you should read one book.
Yeah.
And people are mad.
My God, people are so ridiculous.
But I saw Danielle when it was happening, like she was down here and she was like, what is going on? I was like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. All right. Yeah. So let's go to the next news item. Dana Kennedy was named the senior vice president and publisher of Simon & Schuster last week. So Simon & Schuster is a major publisher, but then Simon & Schuster is also the lead imprint of that publisher, so it's a little confusing. She's been serving as administrator of the Pulitzer Prize for several years and is the first Black person to hold this position. So that was some good news I saw this week. I was like,
yeah. Every time I hear Pulitzer Prizes, I'm just like, wow, that sounds so fancy.
Yeah.
It's just because, like, in YA, you know, I talk about this all the time in young adult literature, where, or rather, Danielle and I talk about it all the time, where we're like, YA never really gets the big awards. Like, we're never even thought of, because it's like, you know, a genre that it's predominantly read by women and written by women. So I never know all of the big literary names because I'm like, if you guys are not going to read us, we're not going to read you either. Which is not true. I do read adult books. It's just my preference is usually for teen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't read a lot of literary adult fiction. I read a lot of adult fiction, but mainly genre and nonfiction. And so like a lot of the big prizes, I have no idea. Like, oh, I've heard that name before.
Yeah. But I this is good news. I mean, I'm thrilled to hear that Simon & Schuster has a Black woman as publisher, which is amazing. And I do have, and I talk so much shit about adult books, but I have an adult book coming out in 2021 through Simon & Schuster. It hasn't been announced, so I'm just telling, you know,
in general,
come talk live about it. You know, we can keep a secret. It's not really a secret, but it's an open secret. But I'm thrilled that like I get to be at this publisher and say like, oh look, like Simon & Schuster is doing good things, and I'm happy to be able to be published by them.
Yeah. And this is what a lot of people are asking for. You know, we want to see more people of color in leadership roles.
And a publishing giant like that lead is like is fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. Dana Kennedy. So,
all right, a last piece of news.
Awesome, Bookish clothing company Out of Print has released a line of book themed masks to benefit booksellers in financial need. This is amazing because I need to buy more masks.
Yeah, we talked about Bink, which is the organization that they're donating the proceeds to in like October, mm-hmm. and it turned out like the need for these grants. So they give grants to booksellers who are out of work for whatever reason or need additional money, mm-hmm. you know, to cover expenses. And the need for it had grown so much in the last 2 years, and then coronavirus happened. And so I'm sure like their need is just astronomical right now.
Damn, Corona is just ruining all of us.
Laura says Out of Print has masks. Take my money.
Yep.
Yeah. The main reason I wanted to include this is just because I felt like my viewers would be interested in it. And so I'll put the link down below, but if you go to the Out of Print website, you can see them there too.
Yeah. I want to take a look. If I hover over it, I will be able to see the mask. That's super cool. I think I would love, like, I want a book mask of the poetry where it's like blacked out, like blackout poetry. That would be cool. I could give that to Victoria Schwab because it's like her book Vicious.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They have a couple like one specific to certain books. So they have like a Don't Panic mask. They have I don't know all of them, but they have like general kind of book designs, and then they have a book nerd one, and they have the banned books one where it has like the words crossed out.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, check it out later tonight. And now we get to bring on Gretchen.
Yay!
So I'm going to read her bio and then we'll bring her on. Gretchen McNeil is the author of several young adult novels for Balzer & Bray, including Possessed, 359, Relic, I'm Not Your Manic Pixie Dream Girl, Get Even, Get Dirty, and 10, as well as the horror comedy novels Hashtag Murder Trending and Hashtag Murder Funding for Disney Freeform. Her next novel, Hashtag No Escape, hits shelves in the fall of 2020. 10 Murder Island, the film adaptation of 10, starring China Anne McClain, was premiered on Lifetime in 2017. Get Even and Get Dirty have been adapted as the series Get Even, which premiered in the BBC in February 2020, and is coming to Netflix July 31st. So we're going to get to watch it in a couple weeks. So please welcome to the show, Gretchen. Oh, I clicked the wrong button. There
we go. Hello, everybody.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
I'm good. I'm only mildly sleep deprived as a recent mother of two, but I'm hanging in.
Awesome. Yeah. So Gretchen and I met in, let's see, 2012? 13?
That sounds right. Yeah. I think 12. Yeah.
when my sister and I applied to be on the Wyatt Rebels.
Yes, we were casting replacement members. We had some people leave, and those of us that were left, which I think was basically Scott, Tracy, and I, were casting sort of a group of replacements. And we loved your submission, and we love that you guys were sisters. And there we go. The rest is history.
It's funny because, like, my sister basically made me apply for that because she wanted to do it, but she's like, I don't have the credentials you do. And aww. I was so awkward. Like, I had never made a video before.
It was real. And, yeah. You know, that's what made, I think, the Rebels memorable was it wasn't highly staged theatrics on YouTube. It was just a bunch of writers and book lovers talking about what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm the one that's still on YouTube and she doesn't even, she lets me use her internet to make my videos. That's it.
Hey, that's an important that contribution.
Sister.
How did you two meet, Zaretta? Gretchen, you guys know each other, have known each other for a while too.
Well, I mean, not too much longer than that, but Z and I were both debuts in 2012, except that my first book actually came out in 2011, but that's like a whole nother story.
Did that like move from to August 2011? Yeah. So you were in 11Z and an Apocalypse.
I never joined the 11Zs though, because it was so late that they moved my book. I was like, and I had started the 2012 debut.
Yeah, you were our leader.
With Lynn Kelly. And so it felt stupid to leave. I was like, whatever. but that's how we met. And then we did that signing together in New York. God, for I was around BEA. It must have been BEA
2012, yeah.
2012, yeah. And that was the first time we met in
person. The group signing? Yeah, we did a massive group signing. Like, we rented a room at the Javits, and we were like, not just me and Gretchen, but like all of the apocalypses that wanted to be there. And we just invited people to come and meet us, right? So it was like a meet and greet with us.
And then somebody handed me the microphone and said, "You're emceeing." And I was like, oh.
We didn't plan that very well. I remember.
No.
Well, Gretchen, you're a good person to do that, at least.
So what happens when you're an extrovert in a room full of introverts? Like,
tell me about it. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how we met, and I just make her stay friends with me. So
yeah, I mean, she's she stays at my place when she's in LA, and she's met my oldest kid, and you know, we've been friends for a long, I mean, it feels like longer than it is, but
it does. Yeah. Yeah.
But yes.
Cool. Very nice. Let's see. We have a couple of people want to say hey to you, Gretchen, Heather, and Victoria, and Jennifer.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. All right. So Get Even premieres in the US on the 31st. You seen it?
I have seen it. The BBC iPlayer, which is sort of their streaming service, premiered it in February, and they sent me links to be able to view it in the US. Oh, and so my husband and I binged it over like two nights, and it was surreal. I mean, I'd had this experience once before because we had the Lifetime movie of 10, which was watching something you wrote be adapted by somebody else and then sitting there and like trying not to, like trying to remember, first of all, what you wrote versus what they changed, and then trying not to critique it, but then also this just overwhelming sense of unworthiness at it being your book. And then you start seeing all the plot failures and you're like, oh my God, like we should have fixed that before like they made an adaptation. So I'd had that experience the one time, and I had a big viewing party in Los Angeles at a friend's a friend's husband has a warehouse, and we had a party, and I invited, you know, like everybody, as I do, and proceeded to drink a lot of wine. So by the time we actually got the movie on, I was a little drunk, and I was like heckling my own movie because I was so nervous and so uncomfortable. So this time, because we're all in quarantine lockdown here in Los Angeles still, there will be no party. It will, you know, and again, my husband and I have already seen it. I know there's a few changes for Netflix. It's mostly the opening title sequence, which I haven't seen yet. So that'll be new. But I had the experience before, so it wasn't quite as jarring to watch Get Even. The weirdest part is that I wrote these books what feels like a really long time ago. I finished the edits on Get Even like the week before I got married, which was November of 2013. I wrote the sequel the following spring. So that's, I mean, I've written how many books since then? And so you have these moments where like, what did I put in the book? What? And then of course it's set in the book, it's set in Northern California. This version is set in the Manchester area. So again, you have a lot of changes. A lot of the humor is sort of altered to be a little bit more Brit humor. Honestly, a lot of the humor has been kind of stripped away to make it a little bit more thrillery. And, you know, I love me my jokes. So
I love your jokes. Like books are so, like your books are like, when they're so you, but they're also so California.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know.
In another way that I will be interested to see, you know, cause I obviously have both of those, both, you know, of the books to see the changes and how they Britishify it.
Britishized it. Yeah. I mean, part of it is the accent, right? Like accent does it. And then there is a very specific UK private school flair that is very different than sort of in the books. It's a Catholic high school in Northern California. So this has a very different feeling. Like British public private schools have a very different kind of thing going on. But the story, with the exception of how the sort of finale plays out, the story is actually very, very close to what I wrote. There were some big plot changes. There's a character that I kill in the books that doesn't die in the show. And I was like, oh, okay. And then another character that dies.
Oh, you're still here.
And another character who dies in that one's place. And I'm like,
so even you were surprised.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, I'd read the script for the pilot, which is, it's an hour long. It's basically the first two episodes. And I'd read that and it, like, but you don't see the big surprises coming. And you know, they maintained the diversity of the books. It's a different diversity. Sorry, my son's trying to get into the room. It's different diversity, because Northern California and Manchester sort of have, you know, different groups of people who have moved there over the years. And I, when I set my book somewhere, I try to reflect the actual demographics of the place. So in Northern California, you're going to have very large and diverse Asian population in your books, sort of less so in Manchester, but they kept it super diverse. They kept this sense of the importance of female friendships, where they're not, it's not about breaking people down. It's not about about boys. It's just about these girls learning to rely upon each other. And as long as they kept those two things, the diversity and that sort of sense of girl friendships, I was kind of okay with whatever else they did. And the weirdest part, though, is there's two characters in the book, one of whom is named Bree. She's one of the main characters. And the other is named John, which is my husband's name. And John is basically like, if I was writing like fan fiction of my husband when he was in high school, which is long before I met him, because he's like 6 years older than I am. So I was, that would not have been an appropriate relationship. but it's basically sort of like the early days of our relationship in this book that I was writing as we led up to our wedding. And watching that play out on the screen was like, it was very emotional. And I thought that the two actors did a great job. I thought the actor they cast as John, like, really looked a lot like what I, you know, I mean, obviously I know what my husband looks like. But I thought they did a wonderful job. And yeah, so that part was weird for me. It was like a little like oogie, but.
That's cool. You know, it's funny because when 10 Murder Island premiered, I also had a viewing party.
Oh, that's awesome.
Two. There was just two of us.
Great.
But it was a friend of mine that we just do this. We watch like movie events and TV events together and drink a lot of wine. So I was also very drunk awesome. When I watched
it. Were you also heckling it? Because that would just
be a little bit, yeah. Okay, well, because we watched, there was two that premiered that night. The other one
there
was the vampire.
There were three, I think. Yeah. Oh,
maybe there we was, watched all three then.
There were three. It was like back to back to back YA yeah. novel adaptations. Or yeah. maybe one of them was the night before. I can't remember. But yeah, there was like a smattering mm-hmm. in the fall for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah, so we also drank wine and watched that. And so it's so funny that you had you did the same.
Oh did I
That's great. So yeah, Zoraida, if you could read the next question. So if you support my Patreon, you can submit questions ahead of time for our guests, so this is one of those that came ahead of time for you.
The question, do you want me to read the supporter's name too?
Yeah, please.
Awesome, cool. So this is a question from Patreon supporter Lodestar. When you have work being adapted for TV, film, / another media other than what it was originated for, how does that process work? Do people come to you first, the publishing agency? How do you, if you even get to negotiate creative investment? I just would love to hear about your experience with the entire process because it fascinates me.
It is a fascinating process. And so before I answer this question, I have experience in this both as a writer who's had work adapted and as someone who has worked a long time in the entertainment industry. So I see it from both sides. So I'll start with the average experience, which is basically my experience. You have a film rights agent who shops the rights to option your property to producers, directors, production companies, studios, networks, streaming services, whoever they can get a copy of your book in front of. If somebody's interested, then they might option it. An option is just that. It is the right to turn something into a TV show or a movie, and it's a set amount of time. It's usually 12 months, sometimes it's 18. At the end of that time, they have the right to re-up the option for another 12 or 18 months. Usually at the end of that, if nothing has happened, they, you know, drop the option, end of story. And that's like 99% of options. Like that's how it works. I mean, Z's had stuff optioned. Almost all of my books have been optioned once or twice. Like 10 was on its third option when it got made. So that's how this normally works. Options sometimes have money, sometimes don't. Sometimes things are optioned for a lot of money. Sometimes they're optioned for zero, right? It sort of depends on how popular your book is. Again, 10 was on its third option, so not super popular.
Well, I mean, sometimes it doesn't, I feel like people say that only like the big, you know, massive New York Times bestseller like hits are the ones that get optioned. And book is, you know, Labyrinth Lost is still, it's on its third option. With
third, you know, time's charm, right?
Yeah, with like it's no, the it's been renewed, you know, multiple times by the same
that's a
studio.
That's a big deal. It's a big deal that they want it.
Yeah. And I'm like, and my book is like a tiny book, you know, with like a tiny publisher. And so I feel like you never know when things can happen.
Know.
So if I always want to encourage authors that there are possibilities no matter how small.
And it you don't know. It's just like in publishing, like you don't know what a publisher's looking for. You don't know what an agent's looking for necessarily, like what grabs them about a book. It's the same with this. The key in the entertainment industry is having somebody drive the bus. Mm-hmm. And what that means is you've got to have a producer, a director, an actor slash executive producer, a very powerful writer, somebody who is like, we are doing this, because that's how things get done in Hollywood. Like, you've got to have somebody who is that passionate about it or it won't get made. If it's just executives who are like, yeah, this is a cool book, I'd like to option this, trust me, they're going to hop studios in 6 months. They're not going to take your book with them. And then nobody who's left at the place where it was optioned is even going to know who the hell you are. That's how it works in Hollywood.
So
exactly. If you have somebody driving the bus, you have a very good chance of it getting made. In this case, a woman named Holly Phillips. How she got a hold of my books, I still don't know. But she does teen TV shows with strong female casts that are diverse. And that's what grabbed her about the books. And she drove the bus. And so it got made. As far as creative input, I had none. Some people do. I have a friend whose books are being made into a Netflix show right now, and she gets a producer credit. I don't. Again, if you're a bigger book, a bigger author, a bigger price tag for whoever's buying it, you can negotiate a lot of things. I am definitely on the lower end. But I will say this. One of the big factors in whether something gets actually made, so it goes from option to being made, is the price tag. And I don't mean what they pay you, the author. I mean how much that show or movie will cost. There's a huge difference between a $250 million budget and a $10 million budget. Right? And how you raise the money and how you get investors and production companies and whatever on board. So if you write that super amazing epic fantasy, you're going to need to have a Game of Thrones level budget to make a good adaptation. And anybody who loves your book in Hollywood is going to know that reading it. Get Even is set at a private school with a bunch of kids and no special effects. So it's a cheaper price tag, which means that barrier to entry is a lot lower. And so when you think about, God, why did they make that? No one's ever heard of that book. One of the factors is that price tag of how much it'll cost.
Also, it's a really good book, so.
Well, 10 Murder Island is similar. It's a house on an island, and
house
there's
on an island.
There's it's not even any background characters or anything. Yeah,
10 characters, no other people. You can have the house and the island, and that's it.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. Cheap. if I could write like an amazingly compelling book, like 12 Angry Men kind of style, where it takes place in one room, like I would be set, because it's like, you know, that's a cheap thing to do, but it's also a hard thing to do.
Just do a murdery, The Importance of Being Earnest, where they're just all in the same house.
Just all the time. I haven't sold it yet, so I'm not gonna talk too much about it. But I basically have, we'll call it a murdery the real world idea, yeah, that I've been trying to pitch, and they're basically stuck in a house. So
I love it.
I like books about people stuck in houses getting murdered, apparently.
You have a particular brand, I will say that.
Oops.
Yeah. So do they come to you? Did they come to you, or they...
They came to us. Mm-hmm. In this case, sometimes, like, again, I don't know the whole story. I haven't been able to actually get to the UK.
Your story is great. You have a great story of how this? Your producer found.
The 10 one is crazy because the producer was in Portland and they were negotiating some tax breaks to shoot something in Portland. And he was sort of stuck there. He's a New Yorker. He was stuck there for a couple of weeks and he went to Powell's bookstore. And he is now married, but at the time he was single, and I'm pretty sure he was like chatting up the bookseller there. And he's like, if there was one book in this whole store that you wanted to see made into a movie, you know, I'm a movie producer. Oh. What would it be? And she handed him 10.
Wow.
And that was that.
Booksellers are awesome sometimes.
Booksellers are amazing. Yes. I still don't know who that bookseller was.
Yeah.
But you are that bookseller.
Yeah. I've been telling this story for years. I'm like, if you're that bookseller, please let me know. I think he said she had like bluish hair, but again, this was like
maybe she was just 2015. An angel.
She's your guardian angel working at a bookstore.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for me, it was somebody at the studio read an NPR article in which my book Labyrinth Lost was listed as like one of the books to read for 2016 or best books of 2016. And she read it and she was like, hey, is this available? And we were like, yes, please.
Maybe.
And so we were, it was an interesting situation because I had never been approached by movie people before. So it's always a nice feeling as a writer.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's somebody else in a creative field who does it professionally, who sees merit in your work. What's not to love about that?
Yeah. You just gave me an excellent segue for the next question. Speaking of creative fields, do you still sing, Gretchen?
Oh, no. God, that feels like such a lifetime ago in so many ways. I'm not a very good professional opera singer, like not at all good. And then I sang with a circus troupe in Los Angeles for a while, but like it all just sort of dried up. And then I published a book and then, you know, I got married switched. And had some kids, and it's just time. Professional singers invest as much in their art as we do as writers, as much time, as much money, as much effort. And I can't do both. Like there's not enough in me to do both. And so I haven't sung anything more than like to my children in a very long time.
I was in preparation for the show, I was watching some of our old YA Rebels videos.
Oh, and I know which one you're gonna talk about.
I was reminded of the Dare Week, when Kaylee and I dared you to sing a rap song as an opera song.
Yes. And I chose the greatest rap song of all time.
And you know what, Gretchen? We have a clip of it.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want to see right now.
Yeah. So we're going to pull that up right now.
Boy.
It's great. Goodness. It's one of the most popular videos from that time period of the YA Rebels.
It's completely insane.
The YA Rebels feels like such a long time ago.
All right.
Look how skinny I was. Jesus.
You had two babies.
And got old.
You still look good.
Full screen's not working.
You're well preserved.
Oh, that's too bad.
Hold. Oh, nope. We're going to get it to work. Don't worry. I just got to do one thing. Don't you worry. I know you're concerned.
It's a tragedy.
And there we go. It's gonna happen now.
If it helps, I still remember this. Like I could still sing it. I think.
Could you? You want
to
sing?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to. But like.
Oh no, the sound's not working.
I can hear it.
I can hear it.
You can hear it. Oh, okay. I can't hear it, so just tell me when a good time to stop is.
It's like my closet.
This was so great. I was so happy you did this.
Thank God.
Isn't that great? I love it. I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah, you know, and most of that was completely on the fly. Like, yeah. I was just making that up. So, which is not something I was ever super comfortable with, but I had to do a lot in the circus. So, yeah, that, man.
Throwback.
It's got to be 10 years ago, right? At least.
I think that was like around 2013-ish.
So it was 20 years ago is what you're saying to me. It was 40 years ago. That was 40 years ago, everybody. I'm amazingly well-preserved.
You.
Oh, my gosh. Look, everyone loves
it's
it. Look
art. At the comments. It's high art.
It was... It was a fun thing to do. It was definitely one of those moments where before I published it, I was like, holy shit, are you really going to do this? And I was like,
let's not talk about the dare that me and Kaylee had.
What was your dare?
I don't even remember.
Alex dared us. I made the mistake of telling them that I had never heard a Justin Bieber song from beginning to end. So Alex dared us to sing Baby. And it's literally the worst thing you'll ever see. Like, it's not like the funny kind of bad. It's just like the bad kind of bad. It's so
bad. If it's any consolation, I didn't know the song at all because I don't listen to Justin Bieber because I was an old lady.
I didn't know the song. I had to literally learn the words for this video.
I think the only Justin Bieber song that I've ever heard from beginning to end is the Despacito that he sang a guest on for the real Despacito.
Does that count? Does that really count?
It should count. It should count. Okay.
But yeah. So I'm so glad we got to relive those days.
I'm
whew. You're right.
I'm okay. It was like, wow. You know, I don't sound that horrible. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of flaws.
You sound great. Yeah.
But I don't even sound that good anymore. So trust me.
All right. Okay, so
we'll just have to go to karaoke more.
Oh yeah. I'll watch.
Tanked up. A few glasses of wine. We go to karaoke.
I'm like the worst singer on the planet. So when I was 12 years old, my mother forbade me from singing in my house.
That is a tragedy.
I mean, she's somewhat justified. Kaylee's a great singer though. Kaylee can do it. Okay. So we have one more question for you and then we'll let you go. What is the most important book you've ever read and why?
So thankfully you gave me a heads up on this before the recording. Cause like, I'm one of those people with these fly questions and I'm like, oh my God, I've never read a book before in my entire life. And the only thing that'll come to mind is like some choose your own adventure book I read when I was 12 and like the Bible and neither of those two things should be on this list. But the first book that popped into my head, thank God something popped into my head, is a book that I read in high school and it's called The Warrior Woman by Maxine Hong Kingston. And I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, which has a very large Asian population, like I was talking about earlier with Get Even. And I didn't know much about the experience of, very specifically to this book, Chinese Americans coming over to the San Francisco Bay Area, which is a lot. The book is sort of... it's not short stories, but it is sort of short stories. They all work together, but it's structured in a kind of like a short story format. And
As memoir. So it's like it's
yes, myth, as memoir. It's
taking the myth and applying it to her own life.
And I know there's been a lot of controversy over the years about how much of it was actually autobiographical versus fictionalized, but to me it is a work of fiction and the point that it makes is powerful regardless of whether or not it's 100% autobiographical. But it's a very specific and different immigrant experience. You know, all immigrants share a commonality of coming to this country and having to deal with a whole bunch of crap, depending on what decade or century you came in. Specific to the Bay Area, there was a lot of racism that I saw growing up that came out of members of my own family toward Asian Americans. And again, with what's happening now, it's stomach churning to see that still. I don't understand, but that book really showed me a side of my Asian American friends that I hadn't known, because most of them were first generation immigrants. Most of them had not been born in the US. They came over when they were young. Most of them went to Chinese school on the weekends. They couldn't do things on Saturdays, or at least not till the afternoon. And they were balancing this expectation of parents and grandparents that, like, I didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, like my parental expectations were like, get good grades, go to college. That was it, you know?
Yeah.
And not that I'm too many generations removed from our own Irish immigrant experience, but it's a very, very different thing. And it profoundly affected me as a 16 or 17 year old when I read it. And, that's why it was the first book, I think, that jumped into my head.
All right. I love all the different reasons I get for when I ask this question. So
yeah.
All right, Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you all for coming and asking questions. I'm so grateful to have so many wonderful friends in the publishing industry.
And watch Get Even on the 31st. And then you have a book coming out in the fall, right?
September 15th, hashtag No Escape, which is... basically, it's like, how do I describe it? It's a group of young people, they're not all teens, a group of young people in an escape room competition where things go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. So the entire book is a giant escape room experience.
Wow.
I love it.
Sounds awesome.
Complete with there's a 90s boy band themed room. There's a whole bunch of different rooms. There's a British literature themed room. There's a Spanish Inquisition themed room, and there's a room with a giant wood chipper. So,
wow. Yeah. All right.
I did that.
What room I want to be in.
This book, it might have jumped the shark on this one. I'm not sure. I'm going to put that out there, because I wrote it after my son came home from the NICU, and I had like this newborn and 3 months to write a book. So it was like, I told my editor, I'm like, this is either the greatest book I've ever written or it is unreadable. So that's where I was at with it.
And sounds great.
we're gonna find out.
All right, have a good night, Gretchen.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, so that was fun. We went a little bit long, but we were having a good conversation, so I was like, we'll let it go a little bit. All right, so it's time for the audiobook of the week. Do you listen to audiobooks, Sarita?
Absolutely.
Awesome. I love it. So this one is a little bit different than what I usually talk about, but I really enjoyed it. It's The Ministry of Truth, the biography of George Orwell's 1984 by Dorian Lynskey. It was narrated by Andrew Wincott, who is just like the quintessential like British male voice. Like, he just has this great choice for this book for sure. A little bit about the book. This is from the publisher: an authoritative, wide-ranging, and incredibly timely history of 1984, its literary sources, its composition by Orwell, its deep and lasting effect on the Cold War, and its vast influence throughout world culture at every level from high to top. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it more than I thought I would, but I also kind of had like a pre-existing interest in George Orwell, so, but I definitely recommend it, so check it out. Have you read any good ones recently?
So I'm listening to A Song of Race and Ruin right now by Roseanne A. Brown.
I have it on my phone. It's like my next book.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard of it yet, it's a West African inspired high fantasy, where a girl who recently inherits, her mother's throne, the heart of a king in order to complete a spell to resurrect her mom. Meanwhile, the boy, Malik, he needs, to kill the princess, most recently queen, in order to save his sister. So they are literally trying to kill each other. But I'm really excited to. I'm only on chapter 6, so don't spoil it. But the audio is fantastic. The narrators are beautiful. They have such pleasant voices. Another one that I really loved was Jade City by Fonda Lee, which was so cool. It's like, she calls it, it's kind of like a kung fu epic, but it's not, it's high fantasy, but it's set in a modern world as opposed to, you know, ancient times with like horses and shit. It's like a metropolitan city, but it's fascinating. It's this mobster family and magic. It's fantastic. I love it. And so the first title is A Song of Wraiths and Ruin. The second title is Jade City.
Nice. Looks like a couple people are reading it or have fantastic. Just finished
yeah,
it.
That's yeah. Amazing. I'm so glad cool. to hear that.
All right. So it's time to discuss our viewer poll of the week. And I have to share that. Usually I have it shared ahead of time, but I had to share Gretchen's video. So it's gonna pull that up. Just hold on one second. I just got to change that. There we go. All right. So, are you more of an underwriter or an overwriter? And so we have 50% of respondents said underwriter. 39 said overwriter, and about 11% said it depends on the project or genre. So I was surprised to see the results coming in like this because I'm an underwriter and I always felt like everyone I knew was an overwriter.
Yeah, I'm an overwriter. So I always think that the problem, like not the problem, but the thing that gets most writers stuck is like not knowing where to go. So you just like vomit on the page. And I don't think I do that. I think I just, I like to linger in some things where maybe I'm the only person who thinks that they're interesting. And then my editor comes in and is like, no way, delete all of this.
Yeah, you always hear people talking about like these wide swaths of text that they had to cut from their manuscript. And so I thought there would be more overwriters, but I, for one, like, especially setting, when I write my first draft, there's almost no setting details in there.
Okay.
And so I have to do a whole round of revisions just to add all that in.
The beginnings of my books are always overwritten. And then I get to the ending and the ending is like only dialogue tags because I'm tired of describing things. So I overwrite the beginning and underwrite the end. I think that's a more accurate way to describe my writing.
That's great. Nice. Lodestar is also an underwriter who thought he was in the minority.
Well, the majority now.
Now we know. Oops, I clicked on something without seeing it. Jessica goes back and forth. All right. So the quote of the week, I forgot to upload the graphic for it. So I'm just going to read it to y'all because I don't have it on screen. But it's, the classroom was a jail of other people's interests. The library was open, unending, free. And this is from, what was the title of that book? Between the World and Me, right? With from Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yes, yeah.
And I listened to this on audiobook as well. And I remember when he said that line, because he reads the book, it just like struck me. And I was like, I did pretty well in school, but I still kind of understand like this idea of, you know, school wasn't quite the right thing for him.
Yeah. No, I agree because it wasn't right for me either.
Yeah. So I just really like that quote. All right. Zoraida, you have a book coming out, right?
I do. I have
in the fall.
Well, I have several books out this year. but yes, I can talk about the third and final book in, this is my most recent book, Incendiary, which is high fantasy, political intrigue. My next book is September 1st, It's called Wayward Witch. It is the third and final book in the Brooklyn Bruja series. And it follows the youngest of the sisters. So the narrative of this book is the other sisters have been 16, 17. So Rose is 15. She just turned 15. So it's a younger voice, but she goes through the ringer. She gets kidnapped and taken to a fairyland, which is set in the middle of the Caribbean. And I loved writing this book. It actually took me about 8 drafts to get correctly.
Oh, wow.
By the time it was over, I was like, I'm done. I got it. I think I nailed it. And I haven't been able to, I haven't read it since. I'm waiting for the final copies to be able to finish reading it. And then in September 22nd, I have an anthology, which I co-edited with Natalie C. Parker, the author of Seafire. Mm-hmm. It's called Vampires Never Get Old. And it is a collection of 11 stories that breathe new life into the vampire mythology. And we have authors, we have a fantastic lineup, first of all, but some of our authors include Rebecca Roanhorse, Victoria Schwab, Danielle Clayton, and Julie Murphy. So it's a star-studded lineup, absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm excited for that one.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But if you like vampires, vampires never get old.
All right. Well, thank you, Zoraida, so much for joining me. I know you have a very packed schedule, so I'm so happy that you're able to come on.
I so appreciate being able to come on here.
Yeah. All right. We'll say goodbye to Zoraida, and I'll just close out the show with a couple notes. Bye.
Bye.
And I scrolled the wrong way. There we go. All right. Thank you all for joining me tonight. I just wanted to let you know I'm launching a new monthly series next week. It's called Agent Chat Live, and it's going to feature live casual chats with literary agents to help prospective clients get to know them a little bit better. So it's going to be more focused on getting to know the agent more than kind of like the what query tips do you have and what are you accepting, that kind of thing. And so I hope you'll tune in. The first one is next Saturday, July 18th at 4 p.m. And it's with Saritza Hernandez of the Andrea Brown Literary Agency, who is a friend of mine. I always choose like the first guest for each show to be friends of mine, so I'm like comfortable with the conversation. So I'm excited for that. If you enjoyed this show, don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Tell your friends. That's how people find out about shows like this. And you can subscribe for reminders via email in the link in the description down below. And down below is also the link for the Patreon if you would like to support the show financially. Thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. I just got a new one this week. And this is something that Joanna Penn does on her podcast. So I was like, this is a cool thing. So I just want to say thanks to Robin St. Clair, who's my newest Patreon supporter, for joining us. And so I'm so glad you joined us. So the social media for our guests is in the description, so make sure you go check them out. The next episode is on July 25th, and it will feature, I'm very excited about these guests, Joyfully Jay, who is a romance blogger, and Beverly Jenkins. So I'm super excited for that because I just love both of them so much. And